Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Discover a New Beginning Blog Talk Radio, our show, Phenomenally Yours, broadcast weekly on Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. This show is inspired by and dedicated to all the phenomenal women and men who are making a difference. Whether someone recognizes your worth or not, know that you are awesome. Our guest today is Brandy Nicole. She is an identity consultant. Brandy is known by many as a writer and a speaker. Since completing her BA in sociology at DePaul University in 2004, Brandy has been speaking, facilitating workshops, and leading small groups for women and youth throughout the Chicago area. She is currently a resident speaker for the S Word Project, a local sex education program for teens. She has also been a featured speaker for other organizations such as the Polished Pebble Girls Mentoring Program, Catalyst Maria Charter School, Richard J. Daley College, and Salem Baptist Church of Chicago. In 2012, while obtaining her master's degree from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, Brandy completed a research project entitled Glorifying God Through Fashion, which explored how fashion can be used as a tool to engage young women with biblical principles. Brandy later went on to become a licensed minister in August of 2015 at City Point Community Church. Embodying faith, style, and confidence, Brandy has a great knack for sharing her testimony while engaging with scripture, fashion, beauty, and pop culture. In addition, she regularly lends her voice speaking to girls and women on matters such as celibacy, healthy body image, and self-esteem. Standing at 6'3", Brandy has also taken a special interest in motivating her sisters in height to be tall in mind, body, and spirit. In fact, her first published book is expected early this year and is entitled Brandy Nicole's 31 Tall Tales, a powerful sharing of her experiences as a tall woman. Over the past year, since establishing Brandy Nicole LLC, Brandy has expanded her reach as an identity consultant to local businesses who are seeking to enhance personal confidence and soft skill development in the workplace. Brandy achieves impactful results by helping individuals uncover, understand, and utilize their value rationally, spiritually, and vocationally. In her spare time, Brandy can be found journaling and sipping chai tea, though she enjoys dancing, dining, cooking, and making collages as well. Personal affirmations, small dogs, and butterflies are dear to her heart, and she longs for the day when she will have her very own personal treehouse for her self-retreat. Welcome, Brandy, to our show. We are so pleased that you could join us this evening. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Linda. I always make myself laugh when I hear about the treehouse and the butterflies, but those things are important to me.
Well, and you know, we all have to keep whatever it is our vision, whatever it is our purpose is, and whatever gives us pleasure, you know, we have to keep mm-hmm. those things focal. And yeah, to some it might seem a little strange, but you know, at the end of the day, we've got to do what makes us happy and what makes this journey that we call life enjoyable for ourselves. So yeah, you keep pursuing your treehouse and your butterflies.
Thank
you. One day we're going to see you climbing up that treehouse, and we're going to have to say, there Brandy is, a retreat.
That's right.
First, tell us, where did your journey begin? How did you begin on this path?
Path of just in terms of speaking and writing and things of that sort?
Well, yes, just in terms of your whole brand and mm-hmm. and your how you embody your spirituality, your mission with mm-hmm. working with teens and women, how did that journey begin?
Okay. Well, you know, in terms of, so I'll start backwards a little bit in terms of ministry. I knew that I was called to public ministry and to a speaking platform since I was about 16 years old and didn't really know what that meant, but I knew that I would always be itinerant. So, you know, at 16, I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't really tell anybody. And I just went on, you know, being a teenager because whatever it included, I just wanted to be quote-unquote regular and do what everybody else was doing, really. And even though I accepted Christ as my Savior at 12, by the time I was about 17, you know, I was just kind of ready to do my own thing. So I lived a lot of my life, you know, living the party life, you know, being in college and being in broken relationships, and all of those things actually drove me back to God. And that's when really, I was about 25 years old at that point, and that's when everything really began. I've always had this insatiable desire to know what my purpose is in life and just know what I was created for. And that remained, you know, even through my wild child years. So, you know, I would be clubbing, but like, you know, and in broken relationships, but still reading Purpose-Driven Life, you know, trying to find the answers. And it wasn't all really coming together. So I've always had a heart, you know, for young people, and I've always had a heart to encourage women and just really people in general. And so I can say at about 25 years old is when the journey really began. And I went to seminary school shortly after that. And so I guess I was about 27 at that point. And from that point on, just things began to come together just through my studies and through my writing, because I began blogging the year that I completed seminary school. And the blogging was what really created a platform for me to do more speaking engagements. And I never set out to create a brand. It actually happened. So people began to say, oh, I noticed that you're expanding your brand. And I would look like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to be doing, or I'm just doing what I'm called to do. And so, but when you know, they always say you should listen to your audience. And so when people start to tell you you're a brand, then you might need to listen a little bit and try to explore what that really looks like. So that's when it really got started. At 25, I guess I was almost 26 is when I started my journey of celibacy, because it'll be almost 9 years. No, it'll be 9 years in June. And so that's where it all got started, more broadly speaking, if that helps you. Well, I think I answered the question.
Yeah, and, you know, you made a good point in terms of finding your purpose. I applaud mm-hmm. you for being able to recognize what your purpose is at such a young age, because I have women who are clients of mine that are in their 40s and 50s and some even up into their 60s still trying to figure out what their purpose is. So I applaud you for being able to start on that journey, because most of us don't even start on the journey of trying to find what our purpose is in our 20s. I mean, when I was 20, I was absolutely, you're talking about wild child. That was just, I think everybody in their 20s are like that. And most of the time we are not searching for our purpose. We're having a good time. Yeah. So even in the midst of your wild days, there was still a calling on your life that you were searching for that ultimately mm-hmm. led you to where you are. So tell us a little bit about an identity consultant. What is that? What exactly do you do as an identity consultant?
So I work as of lately, and this is a new path for me. This was not one that I created. So it's just interesting how your life experiences will come together and create opportunities for you, because, you know, I always knew the ministry side of myself existed, and I really didn't know what that meant for me, like, in the general marketplace. And so how that came about is just being in conversation with an organization in Chicago that was looking to further develop their entrepreneurs, Sunshine Enterprises, and just having a conversation with one of the program manager, because, you know, they have a training program, you know, that's geared towards, you know, hard skills, technical skills, business plans, things of that sort. But one of the things we were noticing is that people were lacking in soft skills and in personal confidence. And, you know, you can know how to get the job done, but if you don't, if you're not confident, if you don't have people skills, if you don't have the ability, you know, to speak in public, you know, adapt properly and build relationships, then the likelihood of you being extremely successful can be slim. And so I saw that there was a need and that I had the experience and the ability to be able to speak to those things. And so I created a lane for myself that now allows me to have a platform within businesses, with businesses such as Sunshine, who trains entrepreneurs. But then also I have another client. It's like a small business, and I help to coach and train some of the employees there as well. So that's a very new path for me. And the reason that I label it as an identity consultant is because, you know, a lot of times people are so consumed by what they do and, you know, trying to get things right, that there's no focus on who they actually are on the inside and what they're capable of, you know, introspectively. So that's where the identity consultant piece comes from. And so I do focus on personal confidence and soft skill training and development under that hat that I wear.
And, you know, I find that a lot, that we look good on the outside and just are absolute mess on the inside, because we don't. We tend to concentrate more on our outer appearance, and we don't take the time really get to know who we are, whose we are, and what it is that we're all about, so that we can emanate that beauty from within, so that we can in ourselves and in our calling. So I find that to be a very prevalent case with women. And this is women of all ages, because, again, like I say, my target audience typically is 40 and over. So I'm dealing with women who have already kind of turned the corner, as they say. They've already had children, been married, been divorced, been widowed. Some of their children have already gone off to school and starting their lives all over again. And you're absolutely right. We become so consumed with what we look like on the inside, we never take the time to get to know really who we are. And so we just kind of like flounder out there. And I work also with a group of women who are transitioning back into society. Some of my clients are transitioning from homelessness. I also have a ministry, a prison ministry, where I work with women who are transitioning back into society after being incarcerated. And those soft skills are so important, because what I'm finding is a lot of times we can get a job, but we don't know how to keep that job. And it's those soft skills that you mentioned that I think are so important. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And that's, like you said, it's across the board, regardless of what age you are. I think, you know, just like you're saying, women who are transitioning or who have turned the corner, a lot of times if you read articles and things of that sort, you'll also see that come up a lot, with the millennial generation, you know, a generation who has been privileged and afforded a lot of things and don't, and kind of have this sense of entitlement, you know, and maybe very smart and very capable of getting a lot of things done, but don't necessarily have the finesse and the skills to really build relationships. And that's no blanket statement about any of these groups, but I've just noticed in some of my research that it comes up a lot as it pertains to millennials.
That, yes, I would have to agree with you wholeheartedly. I have two children. They're both sons, but my sons are both in that millennial age bracket. And you're absolutely right. My generation has raised a generation of people who do feel that they are entitled. And I think a lot of that has with, you know, we always want to give the next generation more than what we had. But as generations progress, we get more and more and more. And so what we're doing is we're giving the next generation more than what we had, but we're not teaching them the same kinds of training that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes is what becomes lacking in generations, upcoming generations. So tell us, how did your childhood play a role in who you are as a woman and as a professional? How did your childhood play into that?
Well, you know, I was an only child, so I grew up as an only child. I have siblings now. They're 23 and 12. But I grew up as an only child and was always with adults. And when I say only child, I mean it in every sense of the word, because there weren't a lot of kids in my family, so I don't have, like, a lot of cousins or anything. So I was always with adults. That's first and foremost. And I was raised by my mother and my grandmother. My grandmother is from the South, so she's, like, a lady in every sense of the word. and she was the one who introduced me to Christ. And so, you know, both of my mom and my grandma, very poised women, very well-dressed women, well-spoken women, have a very wise grandmother. I believe she's like Hallmark. They don't make her anymore. And one thing that I can say, and this does come out in some aspects of my ministry, is that, you know, conversations were always had in the household about foundational garments and wearing proper undergarments and making sure your panty lines don't show and hosiery and all that good stuff, things that we don't talk about anymore. And so, you know, I have some things in the works where I want to bring these conversations to the forefront because they're not being had at home. And I noticed that even among my peers, they always say, like, oh, no, we didn't have those conversations in my household. And so I just find that interesting. And so I considered it that that's something that was gifted to me, that I'm able to share with my peers and this current generation. And then also, you know, my mom was an entrepreneur. And so I saw that. I saw her have the flexibility, you know, and do things on her own term. And I definitely think that that impacted my journey in pursuing entrepreneurship.
You made a good point when you talked about just the just some of the training and the teaching that you got from your mom and your grandmother, and how that appears to be lacking. Why do you think our younger generation seems to have lower standards than previous generations?
I think that, you know, we live in a time where, one, if I'm speaking spiritually, people are not raised in church like they used to be, and neither is, like, the church, you know, like the cornerstone of the community anymore, and neither do we have a communal way of being as once was. You know, just where, you know, not just where you getting it at home, but you were getting it from you know, maybe the women, like I was raised by a very wonderful group of women in church, you know, who were like pseudo aunties and cousins and stuff like that, that all made a difference in my life. I'm not certain if that necessarily exists in many instances. And then, you know, we just have a culture where everything goes. You know, there's no limits, no boundaries to anything. You know, it's really postmodernism in the sense of I can do me, you do you, I do me. You know, like there's no sense of accountability. Nobody wants to be held accountable for anything. You know, we also live in a time where, you know, if you attempt to correct someone, though I think that if you're correcting someone, you should be in relationship with them to some degree. But even when you attempt to correct someone or give wisdom, you know, you're accused of being a hater. You know, all these different things and dynamics. Nobody wants to be told what to do, you know. We're in a time where this generation has access to lots of information, so they think that they know everything. You know, like, it's just, it's so many different things that I think is a cause of it. And so, therefore, instead of complaining about it, I see myself as a solution to it. So it's like, all right, no one's having the conversation, I'll have it, you know. And don't find it a mistake that those are pieces of wisdom and advice and training that have been given to me, so that I can give it to others regardless of what the majority seem to be doing.
So how do you engage women with biblical principles?
You know, first of all, Linda, I just try to keep it real as possible and just really be authentic. And I think that if you're going to be authentic, you first have to start with yourself and what that looks like. And so I, you know, my former blog, I had my initial blog that even created a lot of what exists today. It was called Lips for Jesus. And there I was very intentional about sharing my testimony, in addition to, you know, bringing in aspects of, you know, pop culture, hip-hop, beauty, et cetera. And so, one, making it palatable for all people, and then also being willing to share my story, because it makes no difference if I just get up here and tell you to do this and do that or tell you all of the things not to do if I can't actually share, you know, my journey with you. So, you know, I have, you know, I would write about, you know, my former experiences of drunkenness or promiscuity or, you know, the experience of rape or my journey of celibacy or, you know, how it can be a struggle not having sex and you are 20-something or now 30-something-year-old woman, or liking a guy and you want to date him but it's not working out, so oh well. You know, just all these things where you just pulling the covers back and it's just like, look, like I go through the same stuff too. I live with a particular standard because I represent Christ, but nonetheless, like, this is my life. And I think when you start there, and I think that makes you relatable to people, and people are more willing to open themselves up to you. I also think that you just really have to break stuff down. I don't believe in being like all high and lofty when I'm speaking, in order to translate messages to people. So, for example, I can think of a time where I was speaking to young women and men, with the organization that I'm a part of, the S-Word Project, and I was speaking to them about, like, self-love and self-worth. And I gave the example of jewelry that you find in a store like Dots or Rainbow versus jewelry that you find in a showcase at Tiffany's, you know. So if you're at Dots or Rainbow, the jewelry is on the rack. Half the time it's on the floor. It's all over the place. Everybody done had their hands on it because it's just there and it's available, right?
That's right.
Versus jewelry at Tiffany's, you know, you have to ask permission. after you ask, you're going to have to wait. Somebody need to get a key. They might not let you touch it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a protocol to getting access to that jewelry. And so those are, like, ways. That's just an example of just, you know, something that came to mind. Like, those are things that I use, just real, everyday, tangible things to get people to understand, whether it's their worth, whether it's, you know, scripture, whatever it is. I try to make it as plain as that.
So you mentioned transparency and being authentic. That is so relevant and so real, because you cannot minister to anyone to try to help them out of their situation if they don't feel that you can relate to whatever their situation is. When I go into the shelter and I minister to the women that are there that are homeless, you know, so I walk in and they see what I look like right now. And to a lot of people, they'll look at us and say, there's no way she can relate to where I am because she don't know what I'm going through. She's never been there. And so I think we have to have a certain amount of authenticity, a certain amount of transparency. I let these women know, I've been homeless before. I've been where you are. Mm-hmm. And you're right. In your journey, to tell of the experiences that you've been through in your life, to try and get them to understand. So I understand where you are. But, Brandy, I tell those women, I'm a living testimony that there is joy on the other side of whatever you're going through right now, because I've been there. You know, and so I think we have to do that. So what are some of then the life lessons that you've learned from your journey, and how are you able to apply those lessons to not only your life, but to the lives of those young women that you minister to?
Yeah, well, you know, most recently I have learned to administer grace to myself and be just to be gentle with myself, and really at the root of that is really loving yourself in a way where you can accept yourself where you are, acknowledge what the breakdowns are, and then say, okay, Brandy, then what are you going to do next? You know, because that's what I do for other people, you know, whether I'm mentoring someone, coaching someone, what have you. That's exactly how I would be with them. That's exactly how I would encourage them. And so doing that for myself, you know, and so just the freedom that I now have to be creative or just live life, because I'm not so hard on myself for not meeting these unrealistic expectations, you know, that we tend to place on ourselves. And I think some of that starts by even just acknowledging what you've accomplished thus far. Because I know I can be the type of person that things will take place and I'll be like, okay, cool. And then I'll move on to the next thing because I'm so busy trying to get somewhere. But I noticed that you continue to use the word journey, and that's exactly what this is. It's a journey, so you don't have to be so fixated on getting, you know, to this particular place. Those are some things that come to mind. But I know recently my dad, in November I was given, I received a 40 Under 40 award through the Young Women's Professional League of Demoiselle TFM in Chicago. And, you know, I had the moment, it was great, and I moved on. And then my dad recently gave me the program and the ticket stub to the event, and he framed it for me with the history of the organization. And now it's hanging on my wall, and I had to really stop and say, wow, that really was an accomplishment. Like, that is really something to be proud of, you know. And I had just kind of skipped over it just because life will happen and you have other things going on and you're so busy trying to get to the next. So, you know, those are some of my recent life lessons. And overall, just knowing my worth and knowing that I'm worth, knowing what I'm worth and being willing to wait for it and not feeling like I have to compromise or settle. And especially, you know, in terms of like men and relationships, but then also in terms of like life biz, like life, career pursuit as well. Going after what you really know that you want and not living in a space where like it's so futuristic, like, oh, someday that'll happen, or as soon as the stars align, or as soon as God give me a sign, I can do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, no, X, Y, and Z can actually take place right now. Just what are you going to do to make it happen, you know?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we do that. We don't celebrate our small victories because we're so fixated on whatever it is we have deemed as our destination, in other words, whatever the big picture is that we're trying to accomplish. And I tell everybody that this is a journey, and where you are right now is a step in your journey. But, you know, Brandy, what I have found is a lot of people think that their journey, it has become their destination. And when you get to a point where you feel you have reached your destination, you are no longer growing. You are no longer trying. You're not improving. You have gotten to a point of complacency and just settling. And you're not necessarily happy where you are, but you just felt. And career-wise, this happens a lot of times career-wise. People will get into a job and they'll stop trying to pursue higher goals because they feel that they have reached, and that has become, in their mind, that has become their destination. So they don't try to further themselves. They don't try to move ahead or move up or even move out into another company that can give them better opportunity. So, yeah, I'm constantly reinforcing and telling people this is only a step in your journey. That's all. Life is a journey, and we just have to keep it moving. And then loving ourselves. We have a hard time loving ourselves and what you said, knowing our worth. So I went on a spiritual retreat this past weekend for women, and we did an exercise, Brandy, that was so awesome. I had never done that before. In my 66 years, I had never done that. The facilitator asked each one of the women to write a love letter to ourselves. That was awesome. Brandy, I would recommend that you sit down and write yourself a love letter to yourself. Because we don't, we'll say, and like you said, a lot of times our accomplishments, we'll skip right over them because we're on our way to the next of whatever it is that we're trying to accomplish. And so we don't take time to celebrate ourselves. That was the most awesome experience that I had in doing that because I told the facilitator I've never done that. I reaffirm myself. I have self-affirmations. But to sit down and write a letter to myself about myself, I had never done that. And it was so awesome. And it was just everybody in the room, we just appreciated ourselves. Because we concentrated on what we are doing and what we have done and all that is good about us that we love. It was just, it was truly an awesome experience. I really got a lot out of that. So tell us, what do you think is your biggest accomplishment that you've made in your life so far?
Honestly, I believe my greatest accomplishment is accepting God's call and purpose on my life. There's no greater feeling than being aligned with your Creator and hearing His voice and being able to discern and being able to give what He has given you to other people, you know, through love, which is the second greatest commandment, and allowing His love to manifest through your love of other people. And so, you know, I'm 34, so I mean, I'm young, you know, and so to be committed and to want to be able to take my desires and what I consider a priority and lay those down and, you know, have a conversation with God, like, okay, so what is it that you want? Well, this is what I want. And like, how does that go together, you know, kind of thing. And trusting him and, you know, yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, it's no outward thing. It's really being in relationship with the Lord, because I ran for so long. I'll say that. I ran for so long, you know, and I saw a lot of religion growing up, and it was something that I didn't want. It was just like, well, if that's what it looks like, I don't want that, you know, but I don't want that at all. Like, if that's what it looks like, and I had this notion that living for Christ meant having to have my head underneath the mattress, and that's not even what it means. I have so much freedom in Christ, and Galatians 5:1 tells us that we've been freed to be free, and you know, and I'm free through my relationship with him, and I do have life more abundantly, and I am really starting to get what it means to seek him first and all other things be added, and really knowing him as my provider, and that he is the source of everything that I have and everything that I have the ability to do. And and I realized that this is a time where that may not be like the popular thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, you know, like, and I live a life with balance, you know, and I hope that through living a balanced life and through being relatable and through being in touch with society and through loving everybody, that I would be able to demonstrate who he is and what he's committed to and the work of his kingdom.
Very good. So you mentioned earlier about working on the S Word Project. Tell our listeners, what is the S Word Project? What is that all about?
Yeah, the S Word Project, the S actually stands for sex, is an organization that was founded by my cousin. Her name is Erin Thompson, and I was a part of the group of community leaders back in 2014 that helped to organize the organization's first event. It's an organization that provides a safe space for teens to talk about sex, and for teens ages 14 to 19, both girls and boys. And so currently the S-Word Project operates out of Chicago and L.A. and has seasonal workshops that may include, you know, hygiene, you know, celibacy, safe sex, teen pregnancy, anatomy, what else, conflict resolution. So that's the S-Word Project. The website is thesswordproject.org. And something that Erin's currently working on is a web series for teens, and is always looking for people who would like to contribute, tell their story, be a speaker, donate financially. So I'm glad to be a part of it, because I think that there needs not to only just be safe spaces for teens to talk about sex, but all people, you know, you just don't find it. And so it's been a blessing to be a part of what she's passionate about and her mission. And I really do believe that it's important to get up under other people. I believe that as I support other people and what their vision and missions are, that God will equally provide me with the same. So I'm glad to be a part of it.
That S-Word Project is not just relevant to teens, trust me, because women in my generation, we are, I've done some research, and the fastest growing generation of HIV and AIDS-related instances are women in my generation. The fastest growing next to homosexuals It's the fastest growing, and that's because a lot of women in my generation are now re-entering the dating scene, and dating is so different now than what it was when we were out there dating in our 20s and
30s.
Mm-hmm. Different. And unfortunately, a lot of these women are applying the same rules that they held 30 years ago, and those rules don't work. So you've got one segment of my generation that are practicing a bit of promiscuity, and then you have those of us have elected to be celibate. So celibacy is something that spans generations now, Brandy. It is not just young people. There are a lot of women in my age bracket that choose to be celibate. I choose to be celibate at this point. So that X project, although it's very relevant and it's very important for teens, trust me, that is also a project that could be expanded to other generations. That's a big deal with women my age. We'll get together and we just have conversations and talk about those things among ourselves, because it's just so crazy dating out here. It's just crazy. You know that. It's crazy, crazy dating out here in 2017. So that's a good project. That's a very good project.
Yeah.
And it's good to get teens talking about that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they do want to talk about it, you know. But if you have parents who never talked about it, you know, and so then they don't, because I can't say that sex was ever really talked about with me, besides like, oh, well, when you're ready to do it, let me know. You know, that's not a conversation. That's not a conversation. That doesn't talk about responsibility. You know, it doesn't talk about the consequences. You know, besides
God.
Don't get pregnant. You know, so
that's pretty much,
you know,
sex talk. You got it.
Yep.
That is funny. So tell us, how has your height? How did your height affect your self-esteem as a young woman? And then how do you then in turn help young women who are also tall? How do you help them face those issues that they may encounter?
Yeah, so, you know, my whole life I've been tall. I was 6'1" by the time I was 13. So I grew a couple inches in high school, and it was challenging. You know, there were, you know, the name calling in elementary school, I can recall, even high school. And, you know, even just as an adult, you know, there's always somebody that has to stop and ask you how tall you are, or if you play basketball, occasionally do you model, or they have a tall joke and it's not funny, and you know, it can be annoying. And so as a youth, I really had to develop tough skin because people were always looking at me. And I can remember it happening, yeah, as early as like 12, 13, 14. And again, my grandmother, you know, always told me to walk with my head high. My grandma's only 5'2", so my height comes from my dad's side of the family, so this is my mom's mom. But 5'2", she's the one who really instilled a great deal of confidence in me. And slouching wasn't allowed, and she told me that God made me this way for a reason, and I may not understand it now, but I will later, and I do. It's very advantageous as a speaker, very captivating, and so it does work to my advantage. And, yeah, it was having to develop tough skin, and I really had to just, like, had this mentality of, like, well, if people are going to look, you better give them a show. You know, you better be the baddest, you know, like,
right,
slayingest tall girl that there is to look at. And so that's kind of what I took on, that, you know, I say that the street, a sidewalk, is my runway. you know, because they look in anyway. So, you know, just own it. Just full out own it. And now as an adult, you know, when I speak in front of people, that's always the elephant in the room. So, you know, I typically break the ice, you know, by saying, you know, well, I gathered you out here today to let you know that I'm 6'3" for starters. You know, like, and then it's always kind of like, oh, my God, did she just say that? It's like, yeah, I did. So,
exactly right.
You know, so that's that. And so, yeah, I had to fake it till I made it. Because even though I projected myself as confident, it wasn't always there internally. But I wasn't going to back down to the people that were saying things. You know, I wasn't going to be wimpy about it. So that's what I made up in my mind I had to do. And so now I can honestly say that I've sunk a little deeper into my skin the past couple years and really more full out on it. It doesn't get easier to endure the comments and the stares and everything like that. It's just kind of a part of your life. You know, it's almost like being a public figure. Well, I am a public figure, but it's like being a public figure because people will literally just come up to you, invade your space, ask to take pictures, ask you, just all kind of randomness. And so I have learned to turn those experiences into something positive. You know, a moment to minister, you know, like encourage somebody. You know, if I see tall young women, you know, I'll speak to them, you know, I'll compliment them. I may even hug them, you know. And then through my writing, you know, I've done some writing on my experiences as a tall woman to just really just put it out there and just, and even own that space of conversation to say, like, yeah. This is what life is like as a tall woman, and yeah, sometimes dating sucks, or you know, just whatever it is. But that God uses, like God uses all of who you are, literally all of who you are, and my height is included in that. So Tall Tales, Brandy Nicole's 31 Tall Tales is the name of the book that will be published this year, that is just kind of a fun, you know, a fun compilation of my experiences and just kind of like life lessons that I've kind of drawn from being tall and gaining my confidence in the process.
So as we start to wind down here and come to a close, Brandy, what words of inspiration can you give someone in our audience who might be struggling with some self-esteem issues or some body image issues? What words of inspiration can you share with them?
That there's only one you. Like there's really nobody else can be you. Nobody else can do the things that you do. You know, God has given us all something, has entrusted us with something, has appointed us to do something. And there are people, you know, in places that each of us are assigned to, and there are people who are waiting on you. And it doesn't matter the size of the audience. It could be an audience of 1, 10, 100,000, million, whatever. But, you know, you're vital in this world, and you have a story that needs to be told, and you are beautiful just the way that you are. I would say don't stop comparing yourself, you know, to other people. I always say that it's interesting how we do that to one another, especially as women. You know, you never go into the grocery store. Imagine this, okay? You never go into the grocery store. You know, you have the apples, you have bananas, you got oranges, like, you never see an apple, you know, an apple is never wishing that it was a banana, right? Like, when we get a fruit basket, like, we're happy to see all of it, right? Like, you know, unless, you know, like, and maybe I don't like bananas, and that's okay, because somebody else does, right? But I'm ready to tear into that apple, or I'm ready to peel that orange, or eat a few grapes, but not, we never wish that one was the other. And that's how I think of women in particularly, like, we make up beautiful fruit baskets, and we all bring something different to the table and a different source of nourishment, you know, like, or whatever the case may be. But that's kind of an example that I have in my head when I talk to women about body image, you know, like nobody does that. We don't do that with anything else, you know, like, but we do it to ourselves.
Yeah, you're right. We do. We compare ourselves. But you know what we do? We compare our insides to someone else's outside. So, you know, we are looking at ourselves and we're comparing ourselves to what we see on the outside, which is superficial. It doesn't matter because it's just like that banana. That banana might look nice and yellow on the outside, or that apple might look nice and red on the outside, and you cut into that sucker and it's got a worm on the inside. So what it looks like on the outside isn't necessarily as important as what it looks like on the inside, you know. So we are about ready to come to an end here. We want to thank you, Brandy, for sharing with us this evening. Can you tell our listening audience how they might contact you, how they might reach out to you if someone wants to get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can visit my website. It's www.whoisbrandynicole.com, and Brandy is spelled with the I, whoisbrandynicole.com. And then I can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at whoisbnicole. And I would love for any of you to join me on Friday mornings via Facebook Live. I can be found on Facebook on my like page at Brandy Nicole. And I do a time of prayer and devotion on Friday mornings called Faithful Fridays, every Friday at 8 a.m. And
well, we want to thank you for joining us this week. Be sure to join us every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to hear from another phenomenal person, or you can listen to our broadcast on blogtalkradio.com/discoveranewbeginning. If you would like to be a guest on the show, or you know someone who is phenomenal, please contact me at linda@lindahwilliams.com. So I leave you with these words from that phenomenal woman, Maya Angelou. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man, the fellas stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes and the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist and the joy in my feet. You see, I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman, that's me. Thank you. Thank you, Brandy, for joining us and sharing with us this week.
Thank you.
You all have a pleasant evening, and we'll see you here next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.